and that card still wasn't good, even with two of them.
Revel in its victories, and sometimes, you know, lick its wounds in its defeat.
I guess that's the best part about Magical Christmas Land. It comes so often for us these days.
I'm using anecdotal evidence.
It almost acts like the old treasure cruise.
Polis is always at least a 2-for-1, unless it kills you.
Is there an Esper Delver deck running around out there?
Cross out Haste and just write First Strike, because that's obviously what it was supposed to be.
This might be the old guy sitting on his front porch saying, ah.
Oh, you brave soul. Thanks for joining us, the Tryhards, for another adventure this week. I'm Sean Seacrease, he's Brian Tibbetts, and he's Matt Hurley. And when we all cross the proverbial streams, we are the Tryhards. This week on Tryhards, what did Team Trios lead us to as they got together in Worcester? And would we change our minds on anything heading into next week in Philly? We're halfway to the Christmas season, and that always means well wishes. Well, what would we wish for Wizards? Brian came up with the idea that halfway through the year, we should check in on what we like, what we don't, and maybe offer a suggestion or two to Wizards. We'll do all that, including get in the elevator and do 3 minutes to brew on this week's episode of Tryhards. Leading it off this week, we're going down on a Sunday in order to accommodate some travel schedules, so some of the tournaments we're going to talk about might not actually be finished by the time we get to it. We'll do as complete a job as we actually can. But to get it started this week, it is still the weekend. And so I am still working on my weekend pack of all-day IPA. That's what I've got in the studio. Brian, what do you got tonight?
The wife and I opened a bottle of Chardonnay after she had made some homemade watermelon margaritas that actually were pretty darn good. So the Chardonnay's fine. Didn't have any beer in the house, going on a trip and all. That nakedwines.com, check it out, everybody. It's pretty good.
Not yet, though. We're not sponsored
not our
by
sponsor.
Them yet. Yeah, we got to hold out till we get that sponsorship here on Tryhards.
Oh, yeah, true.
Matt, what do you got tonight?
I'm just drinking some classic scotch, the house brand from Lauren's work. We just had a nice relaxing day, and I wanted to finish off with a nice glass of scotch to not be so stressed out and kind of get back into the work week this week.
Yeah, and hopefully your weird rabbit doesn't get in the fridge and eat the whole wheel of cheese, even though that would be impressive.
Hey, it's blueberries.
Actually got
eat.
That done. What magic did you guys play this week? It was release weekend. Many drafts across the land to celebrate the occasion. Matt, what'd you get up to with the cards?
The only thing I did was a draft Friday night, ended up drafting green-red deck that had two Elvish Clan Callers in it, and that card still wasn't good, even with two of them and three other elves. Ended up actually taking fifth. I went 3-1, and we played Crosspod. And then this week, to prepare for upcoming GP Minneapolis that's coming up very, very quickly, I hammered out some Sealed. Just trying to get in the flow of things there. And I'll tell you what, this environment looks like it's going to be a lot of fun to play at the GP.
We had the draft at the LGS this weekend for release weekend, and we had 10 at the table. That's two more than you usually try to get, but it ended up being a good number. I ended up in white, black, aggro, little life gain on the side, not enough to be a theme. Went 2-2 in the four rounds that we played, had two really close matches that I lost. The matches I won, I seemed to win handily, and the ones I lost were just razor close. Red-black had enough burn to get there in one of the losses, and then in the final game, Bone Dragon just was too much to overcome. He had it all three games, too. So when your opponent has the mythic black dragon, you just have to tip your cap sometimes. And even though that's not what killed me in the final game, I used all my resources on it. And then he was able to suspicious bookcase something in for the last 2 points of damage. So that was...
The card is really good, by the way.
Oh, suspicious bookcased to death. That's how it went for me this weekend. There are some cards that I've got my eye on, though, for list limited format. The Green Seeker, the 1/3 that taps to look at the top of your deck, and if it's a land, you can reveal it and put it in your hand. I've really been impressed by that card so far, looking at things outside of the actual, you know, rare mythic bomb-type cards, but... We'll see how this all comes together. Everybody that I talk to, though, still doing the mill check. Everybody looks to see if they can put the mill deck together, and then when that doesn't come together, it's kind of on to plan sort of 1A. So we'll see if that actually happens for anyone.
I'll tell you what, Sean. In one of the 3 or 4 sealeds I did this week, I did get milled. In draft, had two of the blue enchantments that mill you, the rare ones, and the two of the uncommon ones and two millstones.
That's so probably the density that you need.
Very quick. It was like 5 turns and you're just dead. And he had a lot of bounce and a lot of the -6/-0 things as well.
That's going to be a real strategy that we're going to have to be prepared for when we head up to Minneapolis as part of that GP. Brian, what did you get to do with the cards this week?
Didn't get to do jack squatta, unfortunately. Just couldn't find the time to sneak down to the shop and make anything happen. But I do have a comment about Suspicious Bookcase that brought back some memories, not good ones, of pre-release. I remember playing against Suspicious Bookcase in round three, and my opponent had both Metamorphic Alteration and Mirror Image and made three copies of Suspicious Bookcase, and late in the game was able to give multiple creatures unblockability. So it was a nightmare for me.
That is hilarious.
Yeah, that was pretty funny.
I think you need a Suspicious Library pass at that point.
I almost wanted to say, like, deck check, judge deck check, and then I'm like, nah, it's sealed. I can't really do that.
Hopefully your days aren't ruined by Suspicious Bookcase the next time you sit down to Core 19 Limited. Guys, one big tournament over the weekend. Unusual to have one on release weekend. Usually there's not a GP, and there was an SCG got together for their Worcester event, a Team Trio event. This is where Legacy kind of took a hit. This stop on the schedule in the past was always Legacy, but it's part of the Team Trios now. And as we speak, the finals are still being contested. Robinson, Gowley, and Fredrickson taking on Bryant Cook, Sorosino, and Cotrope. Cotrope was up in the red-black aggro mirror match for Standard. It was Sorosino on Jeskai Control taking on Gowley on Blue-Red Storm in Modern, and Robinson on Rug Delver trying to take down Bryant Cook on Storm. Cook just won the inaugural, leaving a Legacy, whatever K that ended up being. He's a noted Storm aficionado, so it'll be interesting to see how this one plays out. I think, guys, more interesting was what happened with the choices as far as the metagame for the most successful teams. Every team on more than 18 points, so if you had 19 or more points, you made day two. 270 teams sat down on Saturday, and 26 made it to day two. Now, the reason the metagames for Team Trios, I think, are interesting is because each player gets to play the deck they want to in that format. So they're still choosing. They're telling you what they think the best deck, or at least the best deck for the expected metagame, is going to be. In Standard, six copies of Red Black Aggro made day two, four copies of Mono Red, by far and away the most popular decks to make day two in Standard out of the 26 that made it. In Modern, five Jeskai Control, five Affinity, and in Legacy, it was five Rug Delver, four Death and Taxes, and three Sneak and Show. I don't think any other deck had more than one copy make day two. So, Brian, as you look at that sort of metagame breakdown on what these teams believe the best decks in the formats are you surprised by any of those choices?
Not really. There's solid choices. I mean, they really are. I was really happy to see even some kind of off-the-wall choices. Zan Syed this weekend was running Bant Spirits in Modern. He's probably the only person in the room running Bant Spirits. Watching this, I feel like those Legacy players who chose Miracles for the weekend were getting a little punished. Miracles just doesn't have nearly the good matchup against the really fast decks like Temur Delver that it used to against maybe Grixis and things, just because Temur can hit so fast and doesn't have to give a whole lot of resources to the board. The red black in Standard doesn't seem to be too far off. It's, you know, you've got your ratios of that versus Gift. Those seem to be the two big ones there. Modern, I saw a little bit of Pyromancer. I saw a little bit of Holowan, a little bit of Storm, a few humans decks. And so, yeah, I don't feel like there was anything that was too crazy, Hurley. Did you see anything that kind of caught your attention? These Team Trios things are kind of hard to evaluate on that level.
Yeah, they are a little bit difficult to evaluate. You know, you mentioned the Spirits. There's been a couple of streamers that have been playing Spirits pretty regularly. Because of that, I do think it's actually coming back like a little bit more popular. I really expected to see more of the, they're calling it like Mono Red Splash Nicol Bolas. That's been really popular online. Yo, what's going on there? But I really expect to see more Nicol Bolas than what we're seeing. Sean, did you notice anything that was really crazy for you?
Yeah, and it's the Grixis midrange deck that you were talking about with Bolas. Essentially, they picked up where the Mono Red, Red Black deck left off. And the mana is so good in the format right now that these are decks that are playing Glint Sleeve Siphoner on two, Chain Whirler on three, Nicol Bolas on four. That's eternal format mana if you want to do that regularly. And between the cycle land, so if you lead with a cycle land on turn one, all the rest of your buddy lands, your check lands, come into play untapped for the rest of the game. This is what happens when you play a three color, not Pie Wedge, but the old shards. Like you're playing Grixis and you play Canyon Slough on one, all of your check lands come into play untapped for the rest of the game. That plus being able to play Aether Hub and then get the extra mana off the Glint Sleeve Siphoner. Maybe you don't get to draw cards, but it fixes your mana for the entire match. So turn one, Slough. Turn two, anything. You play Glint Sleeve Siphoner. Turn three, you're going to be able to drop the Goblin Chain Whirler if you want. And then unless you get unlucky, it turns out, when I first looked at the mana, I thought, boy, they're getting lucky. And then I really kind of did the breakdown, and I thought, no, they actually have to get a little bit unlucky not to have three colors, the full Grixis suite, on turn four. And the fact that they can go then, which Bolas is always at least a two for one, unless it kills you, which, in fact, they don't care at that point. And then you get to top that off with Scarab God or Torrential Gear Hulk. You've got creature heavier builds that are eschewing any counter spells, and then you have some builds that are a little bit creature light play in that 14 to 15 instead of 17 or 18, and they're finding room to jam in a couple Essence Scatters, trying to metagame the mirror already. So this Grixis deck, it's not going to be around long because I think like 65% of it is set for rotation, but it's powerful right now while it's here. So this is the one that's interesting to me right now.
It looks like people are really taking advantage of Bolas, even as high casting costs as it is to basically flip it to the double side. You're still getting a lot of value when that forecasting cost dragon comes down. That seems really, really good. And Sean, I think you're exactly right. The mana's there. It's pretty darn efficient in standard right now. And so really good that somebody has figured that out. More than one person, obviously, has figured that out and made Grixis control something that's going to have to be dealt with in the next few months for sure.
Well, and the fact that they've gotten away from just absolute control and now have the ability to play it as a more mid-rangey deck that can fall aggro or can fall back and just be a value-oriented grind deck makes it pretty difficult to deal with. I didn't see it play against any of the true blue-white control decks, so we'll see how that matchup plays out over time. But Matt, I think more to your point, people are realizing it's powerful, but this is the first weekend of the release. Putting together four mythics right out of the gate might have been a little tough for some players.
Oh, yeah. In fact, I've got a bit of a funny story about that. There's only about 12 people playing standard, and then they had like 41 people playing modern at FNM. They bought four Nicol Boluses during it, and they actually had a little bit of an auction. They said, okay, who wants the first Nicol Bolus at $32? And like 14 people's hands shot up. Nicol Bolas is definitely the chase rare, and yeah, you're probably right. It's a little bit difficult to hammer out four of that chase or three of that chase rare right off the bat. I will say the other deck that I'm interested to see what's going to happen is if there's an Esper control deck, and I'm talking in standard, of course, but we'll talk about this a little bit more later in the show just because of the card that's in the elevator.
Now, usually TryHards records on Sunday night, but because of travel preparations, some of the tryhards have to be away from home this week. We're recording Sunday night, and it just went final at the SCG Worcester Team Trios. The team of Cook, Saraceno, and Cowtrip got the win, so that was Storm, Jeskai Control, and Red Black Aggro ending up victorious this weekend. Congratulations to that team. Brian, the other deck that really caught my eye coming out of this weekend, Noah Walker, the visionary player who was responsible for the primordial version of Grixis Delver. He was working on this when people said it wouldn't work, and then as the deck evolved, he was the consensus best Grixis Delver player in the world. He's not ready to give up his horse just yet. He was playing Grixis Delver for his team, replacing the banned cards now, Deathrite Shaman and Gitaxian Probe, with four Bomat Courier, three Preordain, and the fourth Ponder. Now, maybe, okay, he had four Ponders and he went up to two Fork Bolts, but it was that sort of salad bar of cards that he decided to put into the deck. Walker has been espousing Bomat Courier for a while in this deck. I thought it was interesting to see him find success with a Grixis Delver deck that really doesn't play anything like the deck that he's famous for innovating.
I'm so happy you brought this up because I think it's definitely worth a shout out, especially for our listener base, about this Grixis Delver list, because if we're going to look at any Grixis Delver list going forward, we have to take a look at what cards are included. It used to be you'd see Grixis Delver and just kind of pass over it because it was, you know, for the longest time, it was the same 75. Grixis Delver was a very, very grindy Delver deck. It could have fast starts, but it could also play the long game with Young Pyromancer and things. The Bomat Courier makes it more, probably cuts a turn or two off of its efficacy, obviously, with Deathrite Shaman. So Bomat Courier is one of those Feast or Famine cards. If you can get in with hits of Bomat Courier for three or four turns, play a lot of other things either to the board or burn your opponent's face with lightning bolts, fork bolts, etc., the Disruption of Days and Force of Will, and then refill your hand with that same Bomat Courier that you've been exiling cards with, that is the recipe for success. It almost acts like the old, you know, Treasure Cruise from the blue-red Delver decks of, you know, years past. That's, I think, the strength of Bomat Courier is if it does not get stifled by like a Teemer Delver stifle, which would just be awful, or something else, or it doesn't, you know, get killed early, and you can recycle that Bomat Courier after combat, refill your hand with those exiled cards, that is going to make Grixis Delver a huge force to be contended with going forward. I really like the fourth Ponder. I wasn't sure, guys. I see the one Cabal Therapy that he had main. Wasn't that always a sideboard card, or did they always have one Cabal Therapy main?
I think they had a couple main because of the interaction with Probe and Young Pyromancer.
They had started to shave them towards the late end of Grixis Delver, but they started out with like two or three, and it went down to one for a while.
Brian, I've got a question for you based on what you mentioned about Bomat Courier. Yes, Bomat Courier can refill your hand, and we see that play out that way in Standard quite a bit. But the cards, pound for pound, cardboard for cardboard, less powerful in Standard than they are in an Eternal format, in this case, Legacy. Does that mean that you can cash in a Delver sooner than you would in Standard because you've played your hand out, and getting two cards in a format like Legacy is probably worth more than getting, say, three cards in a format like Standard? Does it actually change your evaluation on when to pop because of the power level of the cards that you're potentially putting under it and the power level of the cards in all the decks?
I think that's absolutely right. I mean, Bomat Courier, to me, if it gets in with two swings and then you are attacking the third time and somebody has some interaction with it and you're able to discard your hand and get those cards back, I feel like you're either even or ahead at that point. I feel like you're taking the fight to them. So Bomat Courier works in the way where it requires your opponent to make decisions that he's not been able to make. Grixis Delver has always been like, okay, I'm going to probe you and draw a card. I now have information about your hand and this. This is now of a damage race, and so it's a more aggressive deck. You have to make a decision. Okay, it's that plus value. It's that thing under the cards that are going to be huge value. There could be a True Name Nemesis. There could be Young Pyromancer. Or there could be a bunch of lands. Who knows? But able to refill your hand, I think you're absolutely right. In Legacy, that's definitely a bonus. So you want to get that thing off the board as much as possible. I feel like, though, on the play, the Bomat Courier build seems really, really good. On the draw, maybe not so much. If somebody is able to fork bolt your Bomat Courier as your first play, that seems like a big beat right there.
So my big question there is, does the Banning of Deathrite being a 1-2 blocker, ignoring, you know, just pretend it was a 1-2, does that make these turn 1, turn 2, 1 toughness cards actually playable? I think that it being a 1-2 was just such a huge mistake. If it was a 1-1, it might have been easier to deal with. I think now that Bomat Courier's out, that Deathrite's out, Bomat Courier's in, and
yes.
I can't speak highly enough about it.
1,000 times, yes. I think that the 1-2, and we talked about this last week, I think the 1-2 of Deathrite is one of the bigger mistakes that Wizards made with that card. That's why I think you're seeing so many forked bolts in so many different decks in Legacy nowadays, right, Sean?
Well, and if you follow finances at all, you've seen the price spike on Goblin Lackey because people realize, okay, your one drop can't just brick wall my one drop and be, you know, better over the entirety of the game. And is Goblins going to make a raging comeback? I would be hard pressed to say yes to that, but at least it's a powerful option that was once again available in the format. Speaking of the format, Matt, did this feel refreshing to you, even reading about it? The fact that, like a fine stained glass window, the refined Grixis Delver lists had kind of taken over Delver. It was the one true Delver deck. It really pushed out any variants in decks that wanted to play Delver of Secrets. Well, now with the banning of Death Ride Shaman and Gitaxian Probe, we once again see this fractured reality of Delver. We saw Rug Delver this weekend. We saw Grixis Delver this weekend. We saw some American or Jeskai Delver, however you want to term it. Rug Delver is the tempo deck. Grixis Delver wants to go a little bit bigger than the other Delver decks and win with Gurmag Angler and some other elements like Young Pyromancer. And then you have the Jeskai Delver deck, which seems to be the sort of Delver Burn heir to the throne. It's interesting to me that we once again have multiple Delver strategies that are all viable.
One of the colors that's been getting more powerful as cards have been printed and stuff is actually white. And I'm actually wondering, is there an Esper Delver deck running around out there? Because you have Fatal Push, you have, you know, Swords to Plowshares, you have the best removals, and now spot removal is extremely good again. Fatal Push just changed the format completely. I'm wondering about Esper Delver. Maybe that's a little side build for the tryhards. I don't know. But yeah, I think any Delver deck right now is just a bomb. And I think any Delver deck that is, you know, pumping out any tempo or anything like that is where you want to be at right now.
Ryan, it feels a little odd to say since Deathrite was banned, but Bug Delver seems primed to move in right now with Liliana the Veil, and now you have Hymn to Turok available, where they can't just turn those hymned cards into fuel with Deathrite Shaman. It actually matters once again sort of what's in their hand. Maybe Bug Delver's just waiting in the weeds because it can go just as big, and then it brings to bear things like Abrupt Decay that the other Delver decks can't answer.
Abrupt Decay is a big reason to play if you want to go like Leovold kind of Delver to kind of get that, you know, aggro control strategy going in. But I think you nailed it. Hymn to Turok is the big reason to play Bug Control. Hymn to Turok and Abrupt Decay, I think those two cards right there just break the symmetry of any kind of Delver matchup. Even with the red burn being what it is, I just think that it's just so good going forward. And that's a deck I was looking forward to maybe cobble together for Minneapolis to play in some side events. Not that I'm going to be playing side events because I'm going to do so well in the main, but that Bug Delver deck looks really, really good. And Sean, I tested with you a little bit this week with Teemer Delver, and I know it's a powerful deck, and maybe it's just the one deck I'm playing against with you with Reanimator, but it just feels thin. You know, you can have some nut draws with all kinds of disruption, but if you don't have the good combination of disruption and aggression, the deck just can kind of sit there for a little bit, and it can really be a victim of its own mana base, you know, with only 18 lands. So it can be kind of a tough thing to handle. Looking at the other variants, I think you're right, Hurley, Jeskai, Bug, some of those other. Esper's a fascinating idea. I hadn't thought of that before, but yeah, you're right. With all the spot removal that white gives you, that seems to be a good one. I still don't know about that, though. I'm still leaning more towards Stoneforge decks and more combo decks to kind of take advantage of this nascent legacy format that we have post Gitaxian Probe and Deathrite Shaman.
I didn't even watch everything this weekend, but I can tell you what made Matt the happiest. Somebody let Baleful Strix off the chain, and it was once again seen generating value and stopping attackers in every form across Legacy tables this weekend. That was a quick look at this weekend's SCG Worcester. Coming up this week, a couple of big events. SCG Philly, it's once again going to be Team Trios, and then two GPs, Sacramento and Chiba. Those are both going to be limited, and they'll be the beginning of the limited GP season moving forward. We'll be talking a lot about our venture heading out to Minneapolis for the GP coming up next week here on Tryhards. The other classics at SCG weren't finished by the time we sat down to report this. At least they weren't made available. Legacy, Modern, and Standard all played there this weekend. Check it out. We'll have the link, as we always do, in the show notes if you want to look at those results and the deck lists that came with them. Brian, we were brainstorming ideas for this week because of the relatively light tournament schedule and the fact that things tend to be quiet on the lead up to release weekend. Everybody's just excited to play with new Magic cards. I guess that's the best part about Magical Christmas Land. It comes so often for us these days. We get new cardboard to play with and new experiences to have. And you got to thinking about it and thought, well, why don't we give Wizards our tryhards advice? Some likes, some dislikes, some suggestions. How did you come to think about this and hit leadoff for us as we give unsolicited advice, the best kind, right, to Renton?
As a teacher, I'm all aware of unsolicited advice. This is something that's right in my wheelhouse. So I'm happy to offer it whenever I possibly can, which is whenever I feel like, because it's unsolicited. But no, this is a question that's been kind of rolling around in my head for a while, because I feel like, guys, and correct me if you feel differently, that we came through kind of the maelstrom of 2017, which was, you know, a very, very volatile year for Wizards, kind of putting out something, having to backtrack, banning things that they didn't feel like they had to ban, kind of falling all over themselves, you know, figuring some things out. And it was one of those, okay, some people gave Wizards a pass, some people were not so kind, etc. And it always gets me thinking, you know, after a certain amount of dust has settled, can we take stock of what has happened, and is Wizards better for it? So it's this always evaluative process I give myself at the end of a school year, at the end of a project I've done, at the end of deck building, tournaments, whatever you want to do in life. Hey, did it work? Was it worth my time? Did I get the value out of it, et cetera? And I feel like the same thing can be applied to Wizards in a way. Since it is July, we're Christmas in summer, so to speak, can we give the Wizards the benefit of some, as Sean said, unsolicited advice? So that's kind of how I came to this, and I want to start off with the positives. The way we're going to do this is this. We're going to do a positive, kind of go around the horn, and then negatives, and then kind of maybe a suggestion moving forward. So my positive, gentlemen, is this. I feel like Wizards has gotten to a point where this game has become more dynamic. We have had things like Battle Bond, which has addressed kind of the two-headed giant. Wizards has put in a lot of work on things like Pauper. Wizards came out with a non-core core set with Core 2019, which I feel is, you know, radically different than the core sets we were used to from M10 all the way through M15. There is such a dynamic component to this game where it's hitting all kinds of places, and it might be geared toward one specific format or one specific archetype of cards. And at the same time, you can look at these and say, oh, wow, could that card be modern playable, legacy playable, whatever? What effect is this going to have? And also on the financial market. So I feel like Wizards has done such a good job of keeping this game dynamic, which is the best thing that it can do going forward. Sean, kicking it over to you, what is your positive for Wizards going forward?
I've got a couple that jumped out to me. I think that the addition of professional authors on the storyline, Martha Wells, who did the Dominaria storyline, and Kate Elliott, who is doing the Core 19 storyline, I think this does two things. One, they were fantastic, and if it serves to get anybody else involved in the game and the lore, great. But I think it also proved a point to Wizards, and that's that if you hire professionals to take over a certain specific area, you're going to see better results. Not that the people on staff weren't trying their best, that just wasn't their area. Grab somebody, whether it's writer, designer, whoever, and put them into their arena in which they are a professional, in which they are going to succeed, and you'll see much better results for your product. That was number one, and I hope it has a ripple effect. Number two, after the problems with energy and the relative community unrest about some of the cards designed in Amonkhet and Hour of Devastation, I thought Wizards sort of chilled for a moment, rebooted their mindset, and has done well with Ixalan, Dominaria, and M19. Ixalan was a little fan service-y with pirates and dinosaurs, but that's okay. They led to a great limited format. Dominaria went down as one of the great limited formats, and it really got short shrifted because of how quickly M19 seemed to come out, and then you had some of the ancillary product like Battle Bond and so forth that I think stole some thunder from it. But Wizards right now is on a design roll, and I think if they keep that up, they're going to once again reinvigorate growth in this game. Matt, what are your positives that you've seen from Wizards so far?
Play design. Now, that sounds odd coming off of all these bannings, but most of these cards were designed after play design took effect. Most of the ones that are in now, they also screwed up the rotation cycle. So I'm going to give them the benefit of the doubt. But I think the power level, and Sean, you mentioned it, you know, the Dominaria draft format. I think that that particular format was extremely powerful because of play design. Play design was a key there because I think they raised a power level of a lot of, or I should say not necessarily the power level, but the usefulness of a lot of the commons on commons, made it a fantastic draft format all around, did a hell of a job with Dominaria. As long as they don't let any more Goblin Chain Whirlers slip through, card is fantastic. I mean, it's, the power level is just off the charts, but it probably should have been toned down a little bit. and we don't know what they have coming up either.
Hurley, I think you mentioned the word negative 7 times in your little segment on the positives of Wizards.
Positives,
so
yeah.
I'm curious to see how many times we're going to hear the word negative on the negative side. So getting to this, the negative, and I think this is something that maybe us older players can definitely, I don't know, we can relate to maybe more so than newer players. I feel like Magic is putting out too much product. This might be the old guy sitting on his front porch saying, Magic needs to get back to the old days where I knew the names of every cards and casting costs and flavor text and power and toughness and everything else. And there's just too much now, and I don't know what to do. But you said it. Dominaria was a fantastic limited format and got basically short shrifted just because of the pace that Wizards is cranking out product. That is in some ways a detriment. I feel like we don't fully realize the effects of these formats. Everybody's so geared toward constructed that the other formats are not really able to be explored for so long. Stores aren't able to hold drafts as long as they want to, sealed tournaments as long as they want to, just because there's something else coming out, and that's basically what they have to do is gear their players toward that. Sean, do you agree with that? And I'm curious to hear what your negative for Wizards is.
Well, I had two, and nonstop promo season was at the top of that list. And it's the one thing that they can control. I understand that their corporation and Hasbro has an ROI that they expect and an earnings report that they want them to meet. I understand all of those things. But I think you can address it in other ways other than overwhelming the market with a glut of Magic cards. And at the frequency and pace at which we've been getting releases, I just don't think it's sustainable for the game going forward. You're just going to overwhelm everybody. My other one, and this is a bigger one, and this is a tough one, because this isn't something that Wizards can automatically control from their offices in Renton. Over the last 6, 8, 12 months, I have had the recurring, disturbing feeling that there is a disconnect that is growing between WotC, its judges, its pro community, and what I'll call its average Joe Grinder community, people like the tryhards. We're not trying to make the pro tour, but we want to go to some bigger events 6 or 7 times a year. We want to go to a GP once or twice a year. We want to go to an SCG once or twice a year. We'll travel. We've got money to spend. And it just seems that all these different disparate pieces don't come together in order to better the community as a whole. Part of the problem is that WotC won't make the judges employees. And I understand their stance on that for the reasons that they have put forth. Do I think they're great? No. Do I think they might want to reevaluate? Yeah. And they need to bring in the community of competitive players, because while we might not be where 85% of their big box store point of sale comes from, we're the ones who get engaged with the game. We're the ones who take it to other players, bring people into the fold, get people engaged about the game. I'm not saying they have to hold a special tournament in which they grab 8 people from, you know, our group of players and have the richest prize in the history of Magic. But there has to be some sense of community, that this is all interwoven, that this all is one thing that works together. Right now, I feel like WotC is the on-high maker of the game, handing down, these are your cards. These are the edicts that we have given you. And if you get out of line with anything that we don't like, even though not all of our rules and regulations are airtight and crystal clear, we reserve the right to hand out lifetime bans or bans for any amount of time that we see fit, even when you're not at a Magic tournament, or even when you're, you know, so forth and so on. So they're almost this shadowy figure that in a way I think is forcing a disengagement on the community rather than trying to bring that community together to operate as a whole. And I hope I've been relatively clear with what I've been feeling, because it was hard for me to try and put this into words. Am I just way out on a limb here, guys? Matt, do you get any kind of sense of the same things that I've been kind of seeing take place in the community, or am I just sort of seeing ghosts here?
No, actually, Sean, you hit right upon my negative. I always look at it from the marketing and sales side, because that's what I do. That's who I am. I feel like they cut off their nose to spite their face every time. It seems like, you know, you're talking about the Silver Showcase. You're talking about, you know, not supporting your content creators. I understand the rising cost of tournaments. I really do. I understand why they did the let's go ahead and make Channel Fireball the premier person. But you've got to increase the prize support if you want these tournaments to continue. I mean, attendance is dropping. It just seems like they can't get their act together with communicating and connecting with the players. And I think, Sean, you hit on the head there where you said handing out their cards. They're great at making cards. Think about how many thousands and thousands of cards they've made and how many true mistakes there have been in Standard and maybe one other format that they're actively testing for. What is going on? Hire a PR firm. Like, come on, do something. I mean, yeah. Am I wrong here, Brian? I mean, like,
no,
honestly.
No. You're not wrong. You're not wrong. I feel like part of the flip side, you know, to every positive, there's a negative, and the yin yang and everything else. There's what I was saying. One of the things that makes Magic such a great game is how dynamic it is in my positive. And part of that might just be the trade off. Well, if you're going to make it dynamic, that means you're going to have to constantly, you know, push R&D to keep coming up with cards and pushing the format, and nothing should get stale, et cetera, et cetera. And there's a fine balance there. It's a great balance. And I think we've all acknowledged the fact that Wizards has a very difficult job on their hands to keep that. But my gosh, you know, if you can only make it down to the shop is a place that I love to get to as often as I can. But unfortunately, my life does not, per our definition of a tryhard, allow me to do that. And so therefore, when I get down there, I'm suddenly like, wait a minute, what? Wait, there's a what coming out? What is this on the shelf that I'm looking at? I feel like I can't even keep a handle on that stuff. And as someone who is a content creator, that's a little disturbing to me at times. So no, I'm totally in with you. It seems a bit ridiculous just how much is getting push, as opposed to just letting things lie a little bit, and maybe even giving your R&D department some time to, you know, revel in its creations and revel in its victories, and sometimes, you know, lick its wounds and its defeats. That's good creative time to have that. You can't be constantly creating things all the time and be the best at what you do.
Yeah, if I'm going to just turn a phrase to sum up what I was driving at, I don't think Magic right now is a holistic community, and that's what I would like to see going forward. So negatives, you have to do some honest, hard look in the mirror reflection occasionally, and hopefully it makes you better going forward. Better going forward. This is the one that I'm most excited about. Brian asked us all to come up with suggestions for WotC going forward. Brian, what do you got in the suggestion department?
I think this is where, obviously, we're going to be differing on our ideas about this. But one thing that I was really excited about to see Wizards do leading up to Pro Tour 25 was this idea of, like, the booster drafts where they did the beta draft, and that was such a success. They did the unlimited draft. They've been doing those things. Celebrate Magic's history more. Get some of that sealed product out of the dusty vault where it's sitting for somebody's investments. Bring it to light and let us play with it. I mean, after all, this is a game. Celebrate the history. Take that upon the new generation to understand where this game came from. Get Richard Garfield out in front of the camera a little bit more. Tell us some crazy stories. One or two every 6 months would be fantastic. You know, we see Rosewater all the time. We see Gavin all the time. We see the writers. You know, I'd like to see some of that history come to the forefront to really kind of give people a sense in baseball and basketball when they, you know, have the old players stand up and give a wave, and some of the younger people, or my daughter sometimes, like, oh, who's that? And you're able to look at them and be like, oh, you don't know who that is? Well, let me tell you a story, little girl, or let me tell you some history about that young man. That's the kind of thing I think that Magic needs to do more of, not just kind of doing a silver showcase draft for, you know, whomever that's for. Still don't understand it, but celebrate that history community-wide, and I think you would get a whole lot of different levels of respect from young and old players alike if Wizards did that.
Matt, what do you have for a suggestion?
One of my big ones is, and I mean this in the nicest ways towards Wizards, once they pull their head out of their they need to make Standard a living, more of a living interactive format. I'm hoping it sorts itself out, you know, since we've had all these bannings and stuff. Hope it sorts itself out once we have the proper size Standard format here. I mean, I hate to say it, but it's like mid-range pile versus mid-range pile versus mid-range pile. Maybe they're slowly cycling people out, people like us out, you know, that played in the old days, that played when you could play the other car, you know, the other style of decks where you could play hard control or you could play ultra fast aggro. But it seems like every deck in standard just turns into mid-range pile of good cards. And I don't have a solution for that. I think it's just more play design and expand that team out, which they just recently did. That's my suggestion. I'm using anecdotal evidence, but it just seems everyone I talk to, the pros are like, this is the most wide open standard format there's ever been. But you talk to anybody in stores and they're like, well, yeah, but all the decks look the same. Yes, you're playing multiple different decks. The differences between decks are 7 cards. For a competitive side, that's great, but you need to make standard more of a pull-in for 4 players. Brian, I'm going to disagree with you on one thing real quick here. The beta draft was awesome to see, and I'm going to agree with Cedric Phillips on this, but if you're going to market the game, you can't have stuff like that. That draft format was terrible. It was awesome for existing players to see, but what's that getting you? And franchise players aren't going to buy more packs because you open up a bunch of beta packs. It's not going to happen.
Your point is very well taken. Yeah. I totally agree with you there. Draft is a really hard format to watch. But you know what? I still stick by my statement about getting Garfield in front of the camera. Getting
I agree with
early
that.
Pros in front. Heck, you know what? When's the last time we've seen some of the pros who are in the Hall of Fame in a seat of Magic and talking about their experience in Pro Tour? You know, 1999, Pro Tour 2000. I mean, God, Lord, that's almost 20 years ago. That would be the kind of thing that I would love to hear, just some of those stories, pull back some of that footage from the times and show players what some of those games look like, even show some of the negatives of like what it was like in Combo Winter. What an absolutely devastating idea that Urza's Saga was. I think you can talk about that in a way and be like, this is how much the game's grown. And ultimately, that's a positive.
I think Wizards, and this is really an improvement statement, but I think Wizards is boxing themselves in by not getting, you know, let's go back to a PR firm, somebody who's familiar with the gaming scene, you know, and they know Magic exists, but they have no idea about Magic. But everyone at Wizards has been playing Magic embroiled, and they're like, wouldn't it be cool if we did this? Yes, it would be, but what's that getting you with your existing audience is the way I'm looking at it. And I think their improvement needs to be find out a way to pull in new players. I mean, that's it. And whether that's make a better standard format, make an interactive standard format, or make it more watchable. I don't know what that is, but there's got to be something there.
I've got a suggestion that's going to get off the rails, I think, initially, but it could serve to pull people in. And this is where I think it's going to be good for the community as a whole, but not necessarily good for Wizards, so I don't know if they would ever take the step. Now, we know Wizards doesn't profit from the secondary market. They sell their product to the wholesaler. Wholesaler sells it to the retailer. Retailer sells it to you. When a card gets sold on the secondary market, Wizards doesn't get any of that. My suggestion would be, whenever a new set is printed, only original cards get black borders. If the card is a reprint, it gets a white border. So it stands out to new people opening the product, and it also tells them, if you adopt this format, that there are previous iterations, printings of the game, and it would get people, I think, involved in going back and going, wait a minute, this card was printed before? When was that? And then they go back and they look, and then they find out more about the game. That gets them more engaged. They find out there's older formats. The rub for Wizards is they don't see any of those pennies coming their way if they do it. And there might be some printing issues, but it's a modern society. We can figure out how to overcome having some black border cards and some white border cards in the same run. I'm fully aware that we have the intelligence and technology to overcome on that. That's just something that I've been thinking about for a while. How do you distinguish it visually? They've already shown a willingness to change the card frame, but I think it would be really cool to see only new cards printed black border first time. And then after that, everything gets white bordered. It would have ripple effects on the collectible world, obviously. So I think this would be a way to make the game engaging, dynamic, but ultimately it doesn't change the way it plays on the tabletop.
That's a fascinating idea. I had never thought of that before, about kind of the border of the card giving a little bit of history to the card. I kind of like that. That's a very intriguing idea, Sean. That's something that should be you know, rolled around in the collective minds up in Renton. This has been a great exercise. I think these are all fantastic ideas that we all have about both positive negatives and suggestions. I think a lot of this stuff just means that we just want to make the game better. We want to make the community better. We want to make our experience with all of this better. So, yeah, kudos to you. I think you put some really thoughtful ideas into this.
Pros, cons, suggestions, hit us up, thetryhards3@gmail.com, or even better yet, hit up Wizards with your suggestions. Get creative in the way you present them, because that seems to be the way things are trending if you want to be noticed in Renton. That brings us up to this week's In the Elevator. Matt, I'm a little bit afraid you've stuffed a changeling into the elevator with you this week. What's going on?
Chromium the Mutable. This is the Core 19 Elder Dragon. Currently, blue-white decks are running just Teferi. And I think you're splashing black. This is an easy splash. They're about $7 now. I'd say pick them up, because worst they'll go down to is probably about $4. It's going to only go up from there. And I think that a lot of value is kind of lost right now within Core 19. I can't speak highly enough about it. It's going to be a huge finisher. Pick them up now before the price goes up significantly.
Chromium the Mutable, this week's In the Elevator here on Tryhards. That brings us up to this week's 3 minutes to brew. Brian, what are we brewing with this week?
Just a brutal human warrior. This is Najeela the Blade Blossom. This woman means business. Legendary creature, obviously. When a warrior attacks, you may have its controller create a 1/1 white warrior creature token that's tapped and attacking. Anybody who knows the card Hero of Bladehold knows how much I love that card, and this is just kind of right from the same cloth. So a 3/2 Najeela for a red and 2 generic with that ability, but for the color pie, a white, blue, black, red, and green, untap all attacking creatures. They gain trample, lifelink, and haste until end of turn. After this phase, there is an additional combat phase. Activate this ability only during combat. This was obviously out of Battle Bond. This has Battle Bond written all over it. This has EDH written all over it. But I feel like with Najeela, this is a card that has so much going on. Even her first ability might be relevant in some other format. So Hurley, I'm going to start with you. Do you like Najeela? Do you see her in any format? And even if not a constructed format, casual EDH, or let's say even tiny leaders, because she'd be legal, what would you do with Najeela the Blade Blossom?
I have one of these, and if I was going to build EDH, a 5-color EDH deck, I think this card's amazing. I wish, though, it was in any format outside of Legacy, Vintage, and EDH. I think it's a fantastic card in EDH. It allows you to do a whole crap ton of stuff with your deck. It allows you to go 5 colors as well, which is pretty awesome. I think it's only an EDH in general. I think you're building a warrior deck around it because it does create warriors. Now, you could just create a unique token deck, but I mean, since you're 5 colors, you're going to have Doubling Season, all the doublers, you're going to have those. And I don't think it's going anywhere else. Now, if this was in Modern, I don't think this would be too powerful for Modern. I think it'd be pretty freaking sweet in Modern too. But since it's only Legacy and EDH, I think it's just EDH. And I think you're just overwhelming with tokens is where you want to go with this.
Sean, what about you? You've got Najeela down for any future brew plans?
No, and I'm going to tell you why. Wizard short shrifted you on her abilities. If you look at the Wooburg ability, now she's a 3/2 that when she attacks, you get a 1/1 white warrior creature token that's tapped and attacking. Untap all attacking creatures. Okay. They gain trample. Yes. Lifelink. Yes. And haste until end of turn. How is your creature attacking if it didn't have haste, if you played it this turn? And what's the advantage of giving a creature that's already attacking haste? Like, this is just a templating faux pas, I think, at this point. When I look at this, I think it should say first strike. So if you have a Najeela, cross out haste and just write first strike, because that's obviously what it was supposed to be. Other than that faux pas, errata.
Sean is errating cards on this cast now. That's... I get it. Okay, got it.
Apparently, yeah, sure, I have that power, but it would be great in any format in which coalition victory is also a relevant victory condition. And I'll leave you to decide those formats, Brian.
Fantastic. I really like any card that creates A, tokens, B, other attack steps. I think that's a good design idea. the Wooberg ability does offer some upside, obviously, but it is kind of a last resort thing. I don't know if it's going to be actually as relevant as some people think it might be. The foil of this card is ridiculously high for whatever reason, maybe just because of scarcity or whatnot. It doesn't seem like it's that powerful of an ability. Once I saw the triple number on the price tag, it's just a little bit crazy to me. So yeah, I think it's an interesting build around, but it really does have EDH all over it. So unfortunately, everyone, we do not have the cutting edge deck for you from BattleBond, the Jeel of the Blade Blossom. I think you're going to just see this on your casual commander tables for some time.
The Jeel of the Blade Blossom, this week's 3 minutes to brew here on Try Hard. That brings us up to what we did to get better at Magic this week. I'm going to hit lead off. What I did to get better at Magic was cycle back to the Arena beta. I hadn't even opened it in like 6 weeks. You want to see how long that update took? It was quite a bit. I had to walk away, get a beer, and then come back when it finally stopped reinstalling. But when you play the 2 out of 3 matches, the actual matches of Magic, not just the one games, it only gives you 2 minutes to sideboard instead of the 3 minutes that you get at most major tournaments. This took me off guard the first time, and I paid the price for it, because if you don't get it right, it just boots you back to your original deck and makes you play again. But I've actually had to focus more when sideboarding, and this is going to be better for me in competitive environments, because I can be very lax playing at the local card shop. Being held to that tighter standard, I think, is actually going to be better for me in the future, and it's an area I need to improve in. Matt, what'd you do to get better at Magic?
I played a whole crap ton of Sealed and Draft. I'm trying to get ready for the tournament coming up. I don't want to just waste my money. I feel bad paying that money in and not feeling like I'm ready. I feel like I'm slightly ready at this point, but I got to say, this is going to be a tough tournament for sure. And I'm really looking forward to it, though. Probably play more of this deal than I have done for anything else.
If you want to watch Matt take batting practice, you're going to be streaming this week, right? Have you set a date and time, or is it just follow you on Twitter and figure it out?
Most likely going to be Tuesday nights, barring anything popping up with work, but 99% Tuesday night.
All right, we'll jump on and hang out with you. Brian, what'd you do to get better at Magic this week?
Made a pact with the other Galesburg crew going to Minneapolis for the Sealed. We have a schedule down for kind of when we're cracking packs, kind of the approach that we're going to take to make sure that we are getting, as Hurley said, our money's worth, that we are as prepared as we can possibly be. Me being gone this week kind of throws a little bit of a monkey wrench into that. Not that I'm not happy about going to this conference, but it is kind of interfering with my preparation for Minneapolis. So that week I get back, I'm going to hit it really, really hard and get with the guys and make sure that we're cracking packs and building as much as we possibly can. And just saying, yes, we did everything we possibly could to be prepared for this tournament.
Getting prepared for GP Minneapolis. That's what we'll be talking about next week. Oh, you brave soul. Thanks for hanging out with us this week, listening to our likes, dislikes, and suggestions. Wizards, as we want to make this community the best it can be. We'll see you next week here on Try Hard.